You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. How do you express your feelings after a team of experts sits you down to tell you that your child is developmentally disabled? Janice Fialka of Huntington Woods came home reeling from such a case conference about her then 5-year-old son, Micah. She sat down and tried to put her feelings into words. The result, a poem that Janice calls Advice to Professionals Who Must Conference Cases.
Before the case conference, I would look at my almost 5-year-old son and see a golden-haired boy who giggled at his baby sister's attempt to clap her hands, who charmed adults by his spontaneous hugs and hellos, who captured his parents with his rapture with music, and his care for white-haired people who walked to walk a bit slower than younger folks, who often became a legend in places visited because of his exquisite ability to befriend a few special souls, and who at the age of 4 went to the Detroit Public Library requesting a book on Martin Luther King. After the case conference, I looked at my almost 5-year-old son. He seemed to have lost his golden hair. I saw only words plastered on his face. Words that drowned us in fear. Words like primary expressive speech and language disorder, severe visual motor delay, sensory integration dysfunction, fine and gross motor delay, developmental dyspraxia, and Ritalin now. I want my son back. That's all. I want him back now. Then I'll get on with my life.
And that she did. Janice and her family, husband Rich, daughter Emma, and son Micah, launched themselves on a mission to prove that labels, IQ tests, do not measure someone's ability to be valuable to the world, to contribute, to learn. Her book is titled What Matters, Reflections on Disability, Community, and Love. Janice, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you, Cynthia. I'm really glad to be here.
That was an incredibly heavy storm of labels and diagnoses that you were given about your boy, and little boy, Micah. And yeah. You quickly realized that being labeled developmentally disabled could have really kept Micah from being included not only in the classroom, but in the world beyond. And you pushed and pushed for inclusion.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, I think he pushed as much as we pushed. You know, there's this sort of famous story in our family when he was in first grade. He was in a self-contained or a segregated classroom. And he, you know, with a great teacher, committed, caring. He came home one day, tugged on my shirt, looked at me, and with somewhat limited language said, "I want to go in the same door as all my other friends." Wham.
Wow.
You know, talk
yeah.
about having a dream. He knew that he belonged with his peers. And so we've been following him through the same door, through same windows, cracking through whatever we needed to make sure that he was with his peers, always with the right supports as well.
And when went to the school to say, guess what, Micah doesn't want to be in that classroom. He wants to be in the door with everybody he knows. How was that received?
Yeah. Well, I think initially people scratched their head. I mean, there were young people who were in the building who were mainstreamed in for art classes or gym classes. So they were nudging in that direction, but Micah was really the first one. So I think everybody was nervous, scared. They quickly learned that we weren't going to budge on that aspect, that we really were committed to full inclusion, as it is called. And so we really sought out resources and people. It was at a time when inclusion was really coming full force, and so there were a lot of trainings available. And we really, a big part of it is we met regularly to talk about how do we do this? What's not working? What's working? How do we support Micah?
And that approach got you right through grade school, middle school, high school, and all the way on to college to Oakland University.
Yes.
Would you have seen that happening back in that first push in first grade?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, initially what we always say is in the very beginning, we did something that was pretty dangerous. We stopped dreaming. You know, when we first got all those labels, we stopped thinking about the future. And quickly we were able to connect with a lot of people who really told stories and helped us understand that really people with labels can live a very meaningful life. So we had to rebuild those dreams, and gradually, You know, Micah became part of that new wave of students with what we call intellectual disabilities, mm-hmm. formerly known as mental retardation, who wanted to go to college because that's what most of his peers did. So, of course, he wanted to do that. And, you know, at first we thought, well, this is a big door to open up because kids with supposedly IQs of 40, Micah didn't read or write in a typical way, use technology. So initially that was a shock to everybody. I mean, they sort of thought we were in denial. You forgot that your child has these limits. And as my husband beautifully said, we weren't in denial. We were in hope.
There you go. What a difference.
Yes.
Now, you did hit you got him into Oakland University.
Yes.
And he proceeded along coursework. He had assistance as he went through, but
yes.
he was a student. But you did hit a pretty formidable roadblock when Micah realized he wanted to be in a dorm with his friends. Talk to us about what it
yes.
took to make that happen.
Yes, yes. Well, Oakland University created a really absolutely excellent program for many students with intellectual disabilities. Mike was thriving there. It was a force on campus. He has this well-known smile. And when he saw, after being there for about 4 or 5 years, taking 2 buses up Woodward every day and 2 buses back, he saw his sister move into the dorm. And he began to know what a dorm is. You know, he had this rich opportunity. And so he said, that's what I want to do. I want the full college experience, he said. And he wanted to move in the dorm. And the university initially said yes. And then we get a phone call one day saying that that decision has been rescinded. And because Mike is not officially a matriculated student, he cannot live in the dorm. And Mike has a circle of friends, people who meet with him on a regular basis to support him, help him make decisions. So that meeting, that gathering, happened to be on that same day. And so the students and some of the professors said, well, what are we going to do about this, Micah? Should be able to live in the dorm. And so they, with Micah's support, did a petition. They held rallies on the campus. He met with the administration. He spoke in front of the board of trustees. He was committed. And he's a peacemaker, so we weren't quite sure how he was going to deal with this. And they kept saying no. And so he decided that he was going to sue the university.
He decided.
Yes, he did. And we supported him. We also let him know that if, you know, at some point it was getting too much, that would be okay. You know, we really want him to make mm-hmm. his decisions. So he worked with Michigan Protection and Advocacy, a state fund or federally funded program. They were wonderful. 2 years of battles, if you will. Depositions. Judge Duggan ruled in favor of Micah, and Micah moved in and had a fabulous semester living on campus.
Now, has that changed? Did that decision open doors all over Michigan for other students to be in dorms?
Not so much in Michigan, but certainly now there are over 300 fully inclusive college programs across the country. Federally, there's a lot of federal dollars behind this. Many of the universities have include students in the dorm life as well.
I'm talking with author Janice Fialka. Her book, What Matters, Reflections on Disability, Community, and Love. And it really is the story of how the entire family, including her son, Micah, push for inclusion from first grade right on up. And take us to where Micah is now.
Yes,
he
yes.
is how old and where is he?
Micah is 32 years old. Hard to believe. So Micah does speak nationally about his life. Mm-hmm. So Micah's storytelling is important to inspire families, teachers, professionals. So he was speaking on the campus of Syracuse University, which I will remind you is 7 hours away. Mm-hmm. And he was there for an entire week for 2 conferences. And this is a true story. He called home and said, "They understand me here, Mom. The next door I want to open is Syracuse University." And so we listened. He created a circle of friends in Syracuse before he moved there. And he was able to secure a job at the university. He is a teaching assistant in a class in the School of Education. So you have young people who are preparing to be teachers with Micah there as in the role of a teaching assistant, a TA. So the message is loud and clear. Do not limit your expectations of kids with any kind of label. Use your imagination for what might be possible. So if you walk across the campus at various points, as we did with Micah, you will hear people say, "Hey, Professor Micah." Mm. Yeah, it's stunning. And so how does that happen? With a lot of opportunities. Mike is fortunate. He's a wonderful kid. I love him immensely. I respect him. But he's not exceptional. What has been exceptional is that he has opportunities. We've learned the power of asking for help. We know that advocacy needs to be consistent. You have to persevere. You have to keep pushing.
And don't let the labels and the IQ tests make you sit back down in a corner.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
What have you learned about strengthening the partnership between families and educators? And by that, I'm wondering, what can school districts do to respond to the needs of their students with disabilities when budgets are stretched tight? Does it take money or does it take a change in attitude?
Yes, right. Well, I think it takes a strong commitment to see that all children belong. And that there isn't that's your student and this is my student. So the concept of all children learning together has to be at the forefront. Doing inclusion is hard work. Anytime you try to meet the individual needs of a variety of students with or without IEPs or educational plans, it's going to take work. So I think that, a strong leadership that believes that in inclusion is important. You know, another aspect is the power of reflection, that if you have families and professionals and eventually as a student gets older, sitting in a circle talking about what's working, what isn't working, so much more can happen. I think sometimes we shy away from when we feel inadequate or when there's fear. I think one other thing is that sometimes when inclusion isn't done well, when there isn't the supports, then it gets a bad reputation. But it's not the inclusion that's not working. It's the way it's being set up.
What would you say to that parent at the beginning of the journey that you were on all these years ago? Now your son is 32. And when you think of what's transpired since he was just a little fella, just before he was five, and you had that conference and you heard those labels and thought, oh my word, where do we go now? What do you say to those parents who are right there now?
Acknowledge your feelings. That's a really important part to this journey, is not to deny the worry, the shame even, as awkward it is to say that. I mean, we've all been taught that disability is something you want to overcome. You know, we're living in a different era now where people are involved in disability pride efforts, knowing that disability is a part of who you are. It defines you. So the feelings are important to acknowledge those. And then reaching out and finding people who can support that vision, learning to invite help. I think we all spent so much time trying not to ask for help that if we just said, hey, I'm stuck here, what can I do? So I think that's it. And valuing interdependency. We can't do this alone. So those are some of my thoughts.
Wonderful book with a lot of inspiration. What Matters? Reflections on Disability, Community, and Love by Janice Fialka. It is great talking with you, Janice. And thank you so much for sharing Micah's story in this book and being with us on Stateside.
Thank you, Cynthia. It means a lot. Appreciate it.
Janice Fialka will be signing her book at some events this month, and that includes an event at the University of Michigan School of Education this coming Friday, September 9th. For more information and links to the book, you can visit their Facebook page, What Matters, Reflections on Disability, Community, and Love, or go to our website at michiganradio.org.